Yeah. Advaita Vedanta and Kerala Renaissance of the 19th century. Advaita Vedanta is often conceived as a philosophy of renunciation and emancipation of the self. Swami Vivekananda applied it for betterment of social life. Swamiji was bold enough to declare, "I do not want salvation as long as there is a single sorrow-stricken man in India." Actually, a little before the advent of the Swamiji, there arose the Renaissance movement of Kerala, on top of which were Advaita Vedantins in the main. During the 19th century, though political life was characterized by inactivity and society presented an outward calmness, subversive forces were forming and developing. This current of social transformation gradually led Kerala into the mainstream of political struggle for freedom and responsible government in the 20th century. The responsible government movement inside the erstwhile Travancore state, which later formed part of Kerala, was a very important one. The important outcome of this ferment was the awakening of the masses, especially the lower orders in the Hindu society, against social injustice and evils. This awakening found articulation in Kerala towards the last quarter of the 19th century. These things which I present with a few words cannot be presented that way, because the magnitude of the atrocities meted out to the lower castes were so numerous that it itself will take hours to be elaborated. For example, the other day I made mention about that in one of my classes. You see, in the 6th chapter of the Chandogya Upanishad, you see, there is a mention about Sthaya Pariksha. the same method of trial was practiced up to the beginning of the 20th century in Kerala.
Putting the hand in.
So such were the all based on the Dharma Shastras. It's holding the hot iron or something, iron piece. Sri Narayana Guru.
And they used that method as well as putting the hand into the oil. They also used the method of holding the hot.
Actually, in Suchindram Temple, the temple, well-known temple in Kanyakumari, there it is. It was just boiling the oil and putting the hand, which is called Suchindram Kai Mukk. Kai means hand. Mukk means putting it into Kai Mukk. It was known as Suchindram Kai Mukk. And it's very interesting. Taxes were imposed on even the breasts of women. And women were not, lower caste women were not allowed to wear upper garments. And it happened actually, they were the Srinarayana mission people. The other day, one person was making mention about that. At one time, a poor lady could not pay the tax for her breasts, so the revenue recovery proceeding started. So before them, she just cut her breast and gave. You take it. I don't have money to pay. And in the southern part of Kerala, of course, there was another rebellion for you see granting permission to wear upper garments, led by the chanars, so-called chanars. They are people like Todi tapers, but they tap the palmyra or the palm where from this jaggery is made. Yeah, led by them.
They formed a group to protest.
Yeah. And because you see, this was period when this conversion into Christianity was taking place in a, in plenty. And you see, it happened. So you see, one Chanar lady, she took to Christianity. She was converted to Christianity, and she wore upper garments and walked in front of an upper caste family. And this caused problem.
Mm.
So they started beating these people. So it resulted in, finally it resulted in the British resident interfering, and also the Maharaja making a proclamation to the effect that these ladies can wear upper garments. But also with restrictions. It should be made of cotton. Many such. Anyway, that okay. Yeah, Sri Narayana Guru. One of the most important social reform movements was spearheaded by Sri Narayana Guru, the great Hindu saint and social reformer. The Guru was born in the Edava community, which had a status far below that of the Nambudiris. He fearlessly criticized and campaigned against the rigors of the caste system, the Brahmin hegemony, and the numerous social disabilities of the Edavas and other lower castes.
Were they untouchable?
Because there was specific distance to be kept, 16 feet, 32 feet, 64 feet, and very interesting thing. So these Yadavas were not allowed to enter into the thoroughfares, but these Yadavas, they didn't allow the much lower communities like Pulayas, etc., to come before them. that was there. That also has to be taken into account. These Yadavas were not allowed to walk through the thoroughfare. And these Yadavas did not allow the Pulayas, Kauravas, other lower castes, not to come in their vicinity.
Pulaya. What was their caste profession?
They were those people engaged in cultivation in the paddy field. Pulayas. Soon, Sri Narayana Guru became the rallying point for the Edavas and Tiyas of the North Kerala, because you see the Edavas are in the south and Tiyas are in the north, both of the same level in social status, to unite and organize. The Sri Narayana Dharma Paripalana Yogam, SNDP, literally the Society for the Propagation of Moral Teaching of Sri Narayana, came into being in 1903. Sri Narayana was, however, no sectarian philosopher and leader. A program of action founded upon such sublime humanism and social purpose was not destined to remain confined to one caste only. It soon became the philosophy of Hindu reformation, encompassing all castes, including the Brahmin. So many of the disciples of Sri Narayana Guru belonged to the upper caste also. Even Brahmins were there. Philosophy of the Guru. The philosophy of the Guru is no matter for a gesture, because the written works of the Guru clearly present us with a picture of his philosophy. But one has to carefully study his works for understanding his philosophy. It may be noted that philosophy for him was not something for waxing eloquent. Philosophy formed the foundation of his activities and messages throughout life. The Guru's philosophy was Advaita Vedanta. His works. The life of Sri Narayana Guru falls broadly into three stages. We see him as a devotee living far from the madding crowd's ignoble strife, in the cool, sequestered vale of life, in forests, on the hills, on the banks of rivers, as a searcher for the truth that he needs must see. Then he becomes a full-fledged sannyasin who attains the ultimate stage of a yogin, when he comes out into the world to fulfill his mission and becomes, as Romain Rolland put it, a jnanin in action, a grand religious intellectual who had a keen sense of the people and of their social needs.
Romain
Rolland has recorded he visited Kerala and he had talked to him, and later in his reminiscences he wrote it. His works, both in poetry and in prose, this is a collection of his works in Malayalam character. Sanskrit works are also printed in Malayalam character. Both in poetry and prose reflect these three stages. In the first stage, the poems are mainly hymns of bhakti. They are sweet and musical. In those poems, the guru adores the Ishta Devata to obtain strength of mind and steadfastness to console the desolate spirit. He prays in turn to Vasudeva, Shiva, Subramanya, Ganesha and Kali. In the second stage of the poems, we see his inner light getting brighter and brighter. Anubhuti Dashaka, Advaita Deepika, Swanubhava Geeti and such other works belong to this second stage. The Kundalini part is a poem explaining, as far as words can do, the mystic experience of one's identity with the absolute, about which I made mention earlier. Kundalini refers to that Kundalini yoga. The Kundalini Shakti is awakened. Detailing the 6 steps of the yoga sadhana of Patanjali, the author of Yoga Sutra. It is one of the most inspiring poems in bhakti literature. The words therein are not only mystic but also expressed in an elusive and ineffable style. The cream of his works is experienced where he talks in pure pictorial and symbolic terms, and these have been collected in the name of Sri Narayana Vaikari. Vaikari, you know, it's the fourth stage of sound. Yeah, Parapashyanti Madhyama Vaikari. They have distressing brevity, presenting as they do the distilled essence of the Upanishadic philosophy with startling suggestions and novel interpretations. The guru, with great felicity, tackles intricate problems and mysteries, but he leaves the way in which he worked it all out to be explained by a competent interpreter, an interpreter who has to be thoroughly familiar with the vocabulary of Vedanta that the guru uses with perfect ease. Excellent in dignified statement and depth of thought as they are, we are struck by his use of small, ordinary, old Malayalam words which have been lost in the marketplace of daily use. And yet, once the meaning is explained, the layman gratefully appreciates that those words are just apt for the occasion. Sometimes the guru makes the context impregnate an old word with a depth of meaning that surely did not exist in its original connotation. And when we have at last arrived at that verbal explanation, we are still dazed because Vedanta has to be lived and is not to be simply learnt. The Brahma Vidya Panchaka, Darshana Mala, Atmopadesha Shataka, Advaita Deepika, Deva Dashaka and Vedanta Sutra are the most authoritative of his philosophical writings. the Vedanta Sutra is a small sutra text containing 14 sutras only, incorporating the basic principles of Advaita Vedanta. And his disciple's disciple, Srinarayana Guru's disciple, was Nataraja Guru, who has written a lot. Nataraja Guru's disciple is Muni Narayana Prasad, who is at the moment head of the Sri Narayana Gurukula, because there have been two sects following of Sri Narayana Guru. One, the Shivagiri Math, and the other one is the Sri Narayana Gurukula. The Shivagiri Math was established by Swamiji himself, where there were many problems in the recent past, and you see, actually speaking, the Sri Shivagiri Math has enormous wealth, so the problem start from there. So the other disciple, Nataraja Guru, he decided not to possess wealth for the Gurukula, and there it is a different approach. So they have also the setup, press, and some places to live there. Some you see disciples are residing there. They have published a lot, but this point they have always tried to practice. So they have established one university, and Nataraja Guru's disciple was Nitya Chaitanyayati, and he actually founded the East West University, for which there also a center is there, and also in different parts. In Germany also there is one center, East West University. Two separate sects are there at the moment, following the principles of Sri Narayana Guru. Advaita Vedanta. Advaita Deepika presents in brief all the basic principles of the philosophy of Advaita Vedanta. The first verse is as follows. It's a rendering. The world indeed is a thousand names, a thousand percepts, and all perceive a thousand objects. Once analyzed, it is real only until one wakes up from dream. The moment one wakes up, one realizes one alone as real. In the second verse, the Guru especially states the traditional Advaita Vedantic concept that the entire reality is divided into two, namely Drik and Drishyam, and that Drishya is not different from Drik. Drik Drishya Viveka. Brahma Vidya Panchaka, Anubhuti Dashaka, Deva Dashaka, Atmopadesha Shataka, Darshana Mala, Vedanta Sutra, and such other works of the Guru established beyond doubt that his philosophy is Advaita Vedanta.
And he wrote all of these in Sanskrit.
These in Sanskrit. Of this Atmopadesha Shataka, even though the name is in Sanskrit, it is in Malayalam. But full of Sanskrit words. In the usual standard Malayalam, we have 60-70% Sanskrit words. So if it is a work pertaining to something related to Sanskrit, of course it will be more than that, some 90%. Yeah. A stanza from the Darshanamala. It was in the beginning as if non-existence. This world, like a dream, thereafter, everything was projected by the will alone of the Supreme Lord, He from whom this world manifested. Asita kre sadevedam puvanam swapnavat pura sasarja sarvam sangalpamatrina parameshwaraha. That is the Sanskrit. The last stanza of Darshanamala has to be specially mentioned here. The one Brahman alone is without a second. Nothing else is, there is no doubt. Thus the knower should liberate from duality. Thereafter he does not return. The Advaita Vedantic logic. There is a widespread impression that in Advaita Vedanta there is no reality for the world. In a philosophy which considers the world as unreal, there is no scope for society and the problem of social justice will never arise. Of course, the world is considered as mithya in Advaita Vedanta. However, mithya and unreal have to be understood distinctly. Both are not to be taken as synonyms. Advaita Vedanta admits of three kinds of reality. Absolute reality is the sole supreme Brahman. The world and its constituents are all practically real. Such phenomenal objects like the shell silver have only phenomenal reality. What is important in the present context is the fact that the world is real for all practical purposes. Practical reality of the world and its mithyatva go together. Hence, society and its problems are realities which can be subjected to fruitful discussion and practical solution. There is no denying the fact that Sri Shankara supported all discriminations, especially evidenced by the Apashudra Adhikarna of Brahmasutra Shankara Bhashya. This was done by easily sidetracking the Advaita Vedantic theory of the practical validity of worldly transactions. At such moments, the stress was simply shifted to the absolute reality. Shankara could substantiate the denial of the right to Shudras and women in the matter of learning the Vedas, as well as being initiated into the path of Vedanta. But this does not mean that this is the only possible way of applying Advaita Vedanta to social needs. There is another logic implied in the very same Advaita Vedanta of Shankara and others. It was this logic that was researched, brought to light, and practiced by Swami Vivekananda, Chattambi Swamigal, and Sri Narayana Guru. Sri Narayana's slogan, one in kind, one in faith, one in God is mankind. Of one same womb, one same form, difference none there is at all, was in strict conformity with Advaita Vedantic logic. The Guru's Vedanta could act as a guide in organizing the numerically strongest non-caste Hindu community of Kerala and equipping them with intellectual weapons for fighting against such social evils like untouchability. What the Guru did was no magic. He simply made use of the super practical logic of Advaita Vedanta. And what is it? It is nothing but the basic unity of all seeming realities. You can find this logic in any textbook on Advaita Vedanta. The Vedanta Sara says that all the 14 worlds, the living beings therein, and all the food and drink and the sort used by them are nothing but Brahman. Living beings are divided into four categories, those that are born of the womb, the egg, moisture, and soil. Men, beasts, etc. are those that are born of the womb. Birds, reptiles, etc. are those that are born of the egg. Those that are born of moisture are the lice, mosquitoes, etc. Those that spring from the soil are the trees, creepers, etc. How can there be difference between man and man in a philosophy that considers men, beasts and all living beings on the same part? There is no logic in Advaita Vedanta that can vouchsafe the discrimination between man and man, not to speak of the exploitation of man by man.
But Shankara, he managed to unite both Advaita Vedanta principles and the strict prohibition of Shudras to study the Vedas.
That is the that is the contradiction. And some people will not agree with this. They will say, no, Shankara never, you see, in the Brahma Sutra Bhashya, of course, it might be an interpolation, a later interpolation. But, you see, those people do not know the fact, still continuing in the ashram, in the mutts established by Shankara. In the four mutts established by Shankara, especially in Sringeri, about which I know very well. Even today, this Chaturvarnya is practiced. Not in the old manner. Of course, you see, they hold scholarly discussions every year. And participants are from different parts of the country. Anyone can participate. But all cannot sit in the same place. Even today, the practice that a Brahmin can sit in an elevated place and others have their own places. And you see, the Shankaracharya, when you see he visits different places when he comes to Trivandrum, of course, his disciples, all Brahmins, that also has to be taken into account. Brahmins by birth, not others. They will be forming a circle around him. And even when he walks, of course, he'll be covered by these people so that others should not touch him. So, discrimination and exploitation are the modus operandi of social injustice. Advaita Vedantic approach to reality never stands in the way of attaining social justice. In fact, the logic of Advaita Vedanta is the broadest and the most conducive to fight discrimination between man and man. Sri Narayana did not oppose the Mayavada of Shankara as did Ramanuja, the Vishishtadvaita. He also did not discard the Mithyatva of the world put forward by Shankara and as did Mathwa, the Dvaita. Mathwa blatantly denied Shankara's standpoint of Mithyatva of the world and endeavored to establish the reality of the world. Sri Narayana also could have summarily rejected the philosophy of Shankara, who justified even the discriminations based on sex and varna. But he never did so. On the contrary, what he did was to utilize the very same philosophy of Advaita Vedanta and apply it and also its logic for the progress of the society. As I said earlier, Advaita Vedantic approach to reality and the logic of Advaita Vedanta are the broadest and the most conducive to fight discrimination between man and man. In elaborating the logic of Advaita Vedanta, Sri Shankara also did his best, but he never practiced it. What Sri Narayana did was just developing the logic further and applying it for changing the society, thus bridging the gulf between theory and practice that existed in Advaita Vedanta. You see, in those days, in the temples, of course, the Traivarnikas, they only had entry. Brahmana Kshatriya, actually in Kerala, you see, the Varna system was not as such, because in Kerala, Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, apart from Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, there were no Vaishyas at all. There were actually no Shudras at all. But these people considered some castes, for example, my caste, Nayars, as Shudras. In the Chaturvarnya concept of the Aryans, Shudras are meant for serving the other three, and Vaishyas engaged in cultivation, etc. These people were not there. Actually, those who served the purpose of Vaishyas were Christians and Muslims. See, they were engaged in these things. So what these people did was, the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, actually in Kerala, the Kshatriyas of Kerala, they originated from the Nayars of Kerala. So that also that claim also is not correct. However, these people, those who became thus Kshatriyas, they practiced the same traditional Chaturvarnya. So Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Nayars were considered people who can enter the temples. So Brahmins, Kshatriyas and Nayars were allowed to enter into the temples and do worship. All others were forbidden, including the numerically most important Ezhava community. So against it, several struggles were carried out. At Guruvayur and also Vaikyam. And at last, it was in 1887 that Sri Narayana Guru decided to open a temple where Shiva worship was practiced. It was in 1887.
He had the temple constructed himself.
Because it was actually not temple. Did japa and tapa for more than 3 hours, and there was a river. He just went there, and dipping in that river, he took one piece of rock and brought it, and a bigger rock was well arranged, and he placed it on top of it and said, "This is Shiva, you start worshipping." It started that way. And it is the at the moment it is the most famous spots where Sri Narayana Guru is worshipped. Now you see, these people have started worshipping Sri Narayana Guru, and he has become God. Actually, the two places where I attended, at Barking, East Ham, and also in East Croydon, these people were doing the pujas with the picture of Sri Narayana Guru, where I did not just participate. I stood apart, and in the end, I was asked to deliver a small speech, which I delivered, in which I actually said the very same thing. You see, when you start worshipping somebody, of course, then his principles will be in library. Nobody will venture. You see, that is the easiest way to to show one's veneration to somebody. So then he need not go into the details of his teachings, etc. And it created mixed impression. On their invitation, I went there. A section of the participants applauded me, because because they were against it. That's the thing. Then Chattambi Swamigal, another person who led this Renaissance movement, was Chattambi Swamigal, who actually did not found any organization or so, but he wrote a lot more than the works of Sri Narayana Guru. That's I have collected the complete works of Chattambi Swamigal, and also along with his biography, I have published it in 1,000 pages. So he has written a lot. And one of his works, namely Advaita Chinta Paddhati, it's in Malayalam. It has been translated into Sanskrit by 2 students of mine, and it's available here. Advaita Chinta Paddhati.
Were either of these people influenced? Did either of these people influence Vivekananda?
Actually speaking, both were influenced by Vivekananda.
Oh.
Yeah. Vivekananda visited Kerala, and he had talks with both Sri Narayana Guru and Chattambi Swami. Actually, the conversation between Sri Chattambi Swamigal and Vivekananda proceeded in Sanskrit, because that was the language both knew. So their conversation was in Sanskrit, and the question Vivekananda put to Chattambi Swamigal was, one of the questions was this one. Kidrishi Chinmudra? Question pertaining to yoga. Kidrishi Chinmudra? Then another question was, Kidrishi Khechari Vidya? So all relating to, Khechari.
Khechari means flying.
So they talked about yoga. But there is one connecting point because you see one Dr. Palpu, his name was Palpu. He went to Madras and took degree in medicine. Actually, in those days, there was no degree. It was a licentiate. Actually, it was a licentiate to practice medicine. And in Kerala at that time, it was not entire Kerala, because Malabar was part of the Madras Presidency and ruled by the British. And Cochin was another kingdom. And Travancore was the kingdom about which I make mention at the moment by the name Kerala. So in Travancore, this Dr. Palpu, belonging to the Sirava community, he went to Madras and obtained this licentiate and came back. And in those days, in entire Travancore, there was only two other doctors. Two other licensed medical practitioners, both belonging to the royal family. So, after obtaining the licensure, he came to Trivandrum, and the words in Malayalam are different. He showed his face to the king, so that he'll get some employment in Travancore under the royal government. So actually, in accordance with the practices of those days, an Irava should not do that. But this Irava person dared to go to Madras, obtain the licentiate, and came back and showed his face to the king and asked for some employment. So there was a royal proclamation to the effect that this person, you see, this Irava community, their hereditary way was to tap the toddy from coconut. So this person, this is a historical truth. The royal proclamation is still there. They issued a royal proclamation to the effect that Dr. Palpu can tap 10 coconuts without paying tax to the royal government. After passing the medical, obtaining the medical licentiate, the Maharaja allowed him magnanimously to tap 10 coconuts. So he left Travancore, and later he became the director general of medical services of Mysore Maharaja. He left Kerala and went to Mysore, and there he became first he was a civil surgeon, then later he was the head of medical services there. And while Vivekananda visited Bangalore, Vivekananda and Dr. Palpu had conversations, and Dr. Palpu mentioned to Vivekananda all these details, and it is said in some of the books, it is mentioned that Dr. Palpu sought the opinion of Vivekananda so as to get rid of these these affairs in Travancore. And Vivekananda advised Dr. Palpu, you go to Kerala and find out some person like me in some saffron, and putting him in front. If you proceed, of course your effort will win. So he came to Travancore. Of course, anyway, it was with his help that Sri Narayana Guru founded the SNDP, about which I mentioned earlier. Later, SNDP wielded power, and at the moment they are the most powerful organizations of Kerala. And at the moment they see the Sri Narayana Guru preached a lot against, especially this toady tapping, etc., because these people were branded as toady tappers, and that also cost them a lot of misery. So he advised against it. He asked people to start business, to go to see. He sent one person to England, and after passing obtaining degree, etc., from here, he came there and started. He was the first to start in Alappuzha a choir factory. So yeah, and also you see, many people were supported by Sri Narayana Guru. Even money was also given to start business, etc. That was his. Anyway, this Dr. Palpu, on the advice of Vivekananda, came to Travancore and initiated these things. That is historical truth.
So Narayana Guru never actually met directly with Vivekananda?
They also met.
They did?
Yeah. When Vivekananda visited Kerala, Vivekananda met Chattambi Swamigal and also Sri Narayana Guru.
And with Narayana Guru they spoke in Sanskrit?
But actually, no record is there. I don't know what exactly. But concerning the meeting between Chattambi Swamigal and Sri Vivekananda, your records are there. That was in Sanskrit. Maybe as regards Sri Narayana Guru, he had disciples knowing English, so he might have spoken in Malayalam, and might have that was the usual practice with Sri Narayana Guru, because with along with him there were people knowing English, because since it was British rule in those days, many people belonging to this community, even though they were neglected there, they came to, many of them are here in England also right from then, so they got English education, etc. These people, when he started his movement, these people also joined him, so there were people knowing English, etc., with him, readily available. So he spoke in Malayalam, and it was translated to Swami Vivekananda.
Just last quick question. Chattambi Swamigal, he was also Erva?
No, he was Nair. And also, you see, in those days, there was a peculiar practice. See, everything these Brahmins managed to arrange to suit their needs. Because his marriage has been dealt with in the Manusmriti, where this Anuloma and Pratiloma marriages have been dealt with, of which the Brahmin can marry a Brahmin lady or any other lady.
Any lower one.
Yeah, any lower one. But a Kshatriya cannot marry a Brahmin lady, but any of his Kshatriya, or the lower. But here in the case of Brahmins, they made a provision. You see, these things are incorporated in the Shankara Smriti. That is why Shankaracharya is considered to be the author of Shankara Smriti. In Shankara Smriti, these practices of the Kerala Brahmins are enumerated. And the provision was that Brahmins can... it was with an intention to protect the wealth of the Brahmin family. You see, the eldest one only can marry from the Brahmin community. Paternal lineage then. It was maternal. So the uncle was the head of the family, not the grandfather. So, you see, the eldest one can marry from the Brahmin family, a Brahmin lady, and the others, the younger ones, they cannot marry from the Brahmin family. Then what they can do. They can marry from other castes like, yeah, Nayars. Or other, others are called Ambalavasis because, apart from the high caste Brahmins, there were several others, Vairyar, you see, these are called Ambalavasins because these people do other jobs. Making the garlands, doing the sweeping. They also should be of that caliber. The Pulayas, Kuravas, they cannot be employed. So these are called the Ambalavasis. Ambalam means temple. Yeah, those who are dependent on temples, these people. So these younger ones can marry ladies from those castes or from Nayars. And to marry a Nayar lady, nothing more was necessary. Simply give a piece of cloth to a lady. That will do. Yeah, so it's in Malayalam the word is putava. Putava means cloth. Kodukuga is the word meaning to give. And its noun form is usually used in the colloquial language as kota. So putava kota. Putava kota means. So later it came in the same meaning. Putava kota means marriage. Actually, the putava kota means giving a cloth, and this giving cloth was part of, even today it is part of the marriage function. Now it has changed. Now, in a tray, the cloth will be placed, and all it will be saris or so. And it will be presented to the bride by the bridegroom. That practice is still there. So in those days, this was there. And this Brahmin who marries this way Nayar ladies can have marital relations with, sexual relations with these ladies, but the offsprings will have no hereditary rights. Because these offsprings will have no hereditary right to have the parental properties. Chattambi Swamigal was one such progeny. Because there was a temple where this kind of a pujari was there. Chattambi Swamigal was born to one priest of this, or Brahmin priest of this temple in a housemaid. Belonging to the Nayar. So his father had no obligation to him. So in his childhood, he had no other way. He had no way to go to school. Formal education had not started in our state then. There were the Gurukula system. So he had no other way. So it was like Ekalavya. Ekalavya, you have heard about Ekalavya. Ekalavya. Stealthily learned how to use the bow and arrows, because Drona was imparting education in these martial arts to the Kauravas and Pandavas. Ekalavya, belonging to the tribal community, it was as a result of this that at last he was asked to a person his thumb has the present to the guru. In the same way, you see, Chattambi Swamigal stealthily listened to the Sanskrit lessons going on in the vicinity and learned Sanskrit. Later it was found out by the guru. He was a Tamil Brahmin who came there and resided there to teach Brahmin students Sanskrit. So on knowing that this kind of a boy was listening to him, see, he found out that, and on questioning, he could realize that this boy was very clever, and actually he had picked up everything he imparted to his students better than his direct students. So he asked him to come in and sit at a corner, and that It was that way because of the magnet. Actually, in those days, that was something, forbidden. So it was that way he started learning Sanskrit, and so he had written he has written a book on the right to study the Vedas, Vedadhikara Nirupanam. Where he has questioned Shankaracharya and his commentary on Brahma Sutra, Apashudra Adhikarana, etc. Presenting evidences from the Vedic sources, especially from Mahabharata, etc. You see, he points out the example of Vidura. Vidura was no Brahmin at all, no Kshatriya at all, born to the Dasi. So, he tries to establish in his Vedatikara Nirupanam that all people who aspires can learn Veda. Yeah, this was Tatam Viswami. And he also, even though he did not do anything to organize the Nayars, he also did a lot at the intellectual level, and it all helped the Renaissance movement of Kerala. And on it was in 1903 that the SNDP was established under the leadership of Sri Narayana Guru. Then again, it was in 1914 that the Nayars organized their this caste organization called the Nayar Service Society. The Pulayas organized themselves and they started Sathu Jana Peripalana Yoga. And communities, this sort of awakening started, all was consequent to Sri Narayana Guru's initiative. So, what he stated in his Jati Nirnaya, he has, to his credit, two small works, Jati Lakshanam and Jati Nirnaya. Jati in Malayalam means caste. So, in the beginning, even though the work is in Malayalam, in the beginning he joined four lines in Sanskrit. Manushyanam Manushyatvam Jatir Gotvam Gavam Yatha Na Brahmanadirasyaivam Ha Tattvam Veti Kopinna. Manushyanam Manushyatvam Jatir Gotvam Gavam Yatha. As in the case of cow, cowness is the generality. In the same manner, in the case of men, humanness, manushyatvam, that is his jati, brahmana, etc., are not of this kind. But alas, people do not understand this. They consider even still now, those who wear the thread, they are Brahmins. And one interesting thing is that those days passed, and now you see, because of the social changes in our country, the things are in a different state, and Brahmins, especially in Kerala, as a result of the changes in the political level, especially. You see, this movement led by Sri Narayana Guru later led to the origin of workers' movement in Kerala, which later led to the communist movement also in Kerala. And in India, actually, it was in Kerala that this landlordship was first done away with. These land reforms took place in Kerala, and these land reforms took place in Kerala only at those days. It was in 1957, and as a result, now we have landlords, and this way many Brahmins have now become very poor. In those days, they need not have to work. They own property, but on elimination of this landlordship, of course, many Brahmins became poor Brahmins, and now they go in for any job. So now to employ a Brahmin is not a difficult thing at all. But now Yadavas, you see, these Yadavas from the caste from which Srinarayana Guru sprang up, and who fought against this Brahmin domination, etc. Now, as far as possible, these Yadavas, as part of their marriage, etc., will employ a Brahmin. Yeah. Because in those days, it was not possible. These people were not allowed to even to go near them. Now, by paying an amount, of course, any Brahmin will go to do this duty. So, as part of the marriages of Yadavas, especially, Brahmins do the puja. You see, those who are believers, in their case, as part of marriage also, there is a puja. It's after the puja that the bridegroom enters into which is called Kadaram Mandapa, and sits there. Then the bride comes. So this puja is done by Jadi Brahmins, or Brahmins who are Brahmins by birth. So it was thus that Sri Narayana Guru, pointing to the elements which are very much applicable to practical life, and also the broadest logic of Advaita Vedanta. So there is no point in discriminating man from man. This logic also is implied in Advaita Vedanta. So it was employing this logic that he upheld the philosophy of Advaita Vedanta and used it to organize these people and proceed and did win. It was as a result of this that as part of the Renaissance movement, it was not restricted to Kerala. Of course, it started in Bengal and escalated everywhere in India. But it was only in Kerala and Maharashtra that this Renaissance movement was led by low caste people. In Maharashtra, Govind Phule was the head of the Renaissance movement, belonging to lower caste.
Phule.
It was from Maharashtra that Ambedkar also. And in Kerala, Sri Narayana Guru belonging to the Yadava community. And in the book published by the Indian Council for Philosophical Research, this one, Advaita Vedanta. Here, Advaita in Malayalam. One paper is Advaita in Malayalam, wherein the Advaita works of Sri Narayana Guru, Chattambi Swamigal, etc., have been enumerated. Yeah.
You wrote that article?
No. So it was written by three people. One, Dr. A.S. Narayana Pillai, who is the oldest living philosophy professor of Kerala. Yeah. Dr. A.S. Narayana Pillai.
Can I ask a question? The question is stupid, but I'm still not understanding why you actually use the word Renaissance in your presentation. Where is the Renaissance? It's all novelty from what I hear.
Where?
I mean, why are you using the word Renaissance?
You see, here, there in actually in India, we use the word Renaissance of India. You see, prior to the origin of and development of the freedom struggle, we generally in the Indian context called the Renaissance movement, which started in Bengal, and Raja Ram Mohan Roy is credited with the initiation of Renaissance movement in India. So it is called the Indian, as in Europe, we had a Renaissance movement, Indian Renaissance movement, and it was as part of this that the Renaissance movement in Kerala also
occurred. I'm asking because it's very different in the case of Europe.
Yeah, yeah, it's different.
The general understanding is that there was actually, it was a very creative period before the Middle Ages. The Middle Ages is usually considered as a period where actually the arts and the literature is really kind of like stagnating or declining.
Yeah.
So the Renaissance is kind of like, you know, it's these kind of activities are born anew. But it's obviously it's not the case in this context, where it's not like there was a period of time where this kind of like non-discrimination, where a time where the women and the Shudras would have been able to access, you know, the Vedas and things like that. And then there was a period where there wasn't the case. And now suddenly you can see this phenomenon again, so you could actually maybe coin that term.
This is not my coinage. It's the coinage by the historians. And we, of course, our Renaissance movement was not on a par with that of the Europe. But we still call, because it led to the freedom struggle and the independence of India. So we call it Indian Renaissance movement. And Raja Ram, and also, there are also various interpretations are there, because the English themselves were responsible for the Renaissance movement. Because it was they who started English education in India. And as part of it, these Indians could come to Europe, you see, to England. Even Raja Ram Mohan Rai was educated here. So, imparting education in England, they came back to India. It was the case with Mahatma Gandhi also. Yeah. Because to travel and go abroad was forbidden for the Brahmins in those days. So those got English education, came back to India, and it was they who started the because it is called so in those days, even though it was not so prevalent in Kerala, in the north Sati was still practiced then, and it was Raja Ram Mohan Rai who fought against this Sati. Yeah, after the demise of the husband, the wife should die herself in the fire of the funeral. So it was against this that the Renaissance movement, which started in Bengal and later escalated to different parts of the country, so it came to Kerala very late. And so that movement is called Renaissance movement. So we call it the Kerala Renaissance movement. And this Srinarayana Guru was the head of the leader of this Kerala Renaissance movement. And it later led to the independence struggle winning, and also the social reformation of Kerala. So that's not my coinage.
Perhaps it's Renaissance in the literal sense of rebirth, rather than in the sense of returning to something that was there before. If you see what I mean, like it can be either one. It can be a return or it can be a transformation.
Then it will be revival. This is not in the sense of revival, but Renaissance.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
And still in India, there are two forces working. Forces of revival and also Renaissance. For example, the in my view, the BJP RSS people, they are for revival.
I still quite don't understand also when you use the term the Advaita logic, and I think when you mentioned that Sanskrit verse where it says Manushyanam Manushyatvam, that example I think was kind of like to illustrate that Advaita logic was used in that context by this Swami.
These four lines are his lines, because he has to.
I just don't understand again. I mean, what do you mean then by Advaita logic? Using Advaita logic in that case, I'm not quite sure what you intend. If you can clarify that.
Yeah, I'll try to explain it further. You see, in Advaitic logic, you see everything is one and the same reality. Everything. Not to speak of the human species or the living beings, everything. That was why I made mention about Vedanta Sara. It's where? See, the entire universe has been divided into 14 worlds. All the 14 worlds, and also the entire living beings have been divided into four kinds, namely Andaja Jivaja, Jarayuja, Andaja Jivaja, Utpija, about which I made mention here. Jarayuja, Andaja Jivaja, Utpija. This is the distinction. And from in the case of Jarayuja, Jarayuja means originating from womb. In the case of Jarayuja, there is no further distinction made in Vedanta. So there is no logic in Advaita Vedanta to discriminate people based on their caste.
But this particular passage describing the different types of birth are basically stories in Vedantic literature.
Yeah.
To illustrate creation, and it's not to illustrate any Advaita principle, as far as I understand it.
Yeah, then you write, you understand it in the correct perspective. But that was not the practice there. What Sri Narayana Guru did also was the same. What he says is correct. This should be the Advaita Vedantic approach. But that was not what was practiced there in my place. Yeah, that is not what is practiced by even the Shankaracharyas of the Shankara Mats. That is my point. Even in at the moment in Sringeri, you see, Brahmins, because my teacher, who happens to be a Brahmin, he was awarded with a prize year before last. So he went there to receive the prize and came back. So we went to felicitate him. Then I asked, he knows me, even though I am his student, he knows that I am a communist. So he knows that. So I put to him, but he has very great appreciation for me since I am one of his good students. Then I lastly asked, sir, how things are there? He said, suppose there every year there they hold this, which is called Pandita Sadas, debate of scholars. They hold this one. See, can I also participate? Can I also come? So he smiled and told me, of course, Mahesh, he usually calls him Maheshwaran. Yeah. Of course, Maheshwaran, you can also come, but you will have a seat, a separate seat. Yeah, because...
Shringeri.
Yeah, because since I am a Nair, of course, my seat is not the same where the Brahmins sit. So it is still practiced there. And not to speak of that, this is my experience. In 1967, when I was a BA student of Vedanta in my college, in those days also, every year there goes on a Pandita Sadas in Kanji, where the Shankaracharya is now in case. They also hold an annual Sadas. And their students, sons, also can participate in various competitions, etc. So while I was a student, reading news about this in the papers, I wrote to them. See, I am a degree student of Vedanta here in the Sanskrit College. I would like to participate. Then they sent me a letter. The first question was, are you a Brahmin? Your Brahmins are allowed to participate in these deliberations. That was the answer. I did not participate. Later, there was there is still that kind of a tough contest between or among the five Shankara Mats, because the four Mats were only established by Shankara. This Kanchi does not belong to those four. This is fifth one. They claim that this also was established by Shankara, but actually it is not so. The other four do not accept their claim. So this Shankaracharya on Jayendra Saraswati of those days, he decided to gain popular attention, because anyway these four mats are not accepting us. Then let us have people's support. he decided to be more generous in these matters. So he started letting people to enter into the even into the interior parts of the mutt, and it was usual practice there to give darshan. So irrespective of caste, creed or anything, he allowed people to enter into the mutt and obtain darshan of the Swami. So this way later their attitude changed. And later, so their college became a deemed university. Now it is a deemed university, Kanji University. And later, so as part of a national seminar there in the university, I was invited. These people never know that I was the same person. Anyway, then I was I am in the university, so I went there and participated in the deliberations, and I also got darshan of Shankaracharya then. They have changed a lot. But still, in all the other formats of Shankara, Chaturanga is being practiced. It's based on one's caste that they are treated there. Is it in consonance with the logic of Advaita Vedanta? No. So what you say is correct.
Well, I mean, the whole idea of Shankara or his disciples having, you know, begin with this mutt is very controversial in the first place. I mean, as sannyasa, Shankara and his disciples... mention that to you.
Yeah.
It's very unlikely that they actually would have done so, because the sannyasins, they're prevented from establishing themselves anywhere at a given place for more than 3 days.
Mm.
And second of all, there's absolutely no historical evidence before the 14th century about the existence of this mutt.
Yeah, that also is there.
So, you know, why 500 years of no historical trace? Existence of this mutt is a bit suspicious, I think, and we should be suspicious.
So if you have an intention to protect Adi Shankara, of course there are enough of logics for the same also. It is the same way that this Abhishudra Adhikarna is considered as interpolation. But one thing you have to remember, whether it be in Shankara's interpretation and interpolation or not, in the Brahma Sutra, it is there, because it has been interpreted by others too, not only by Shankara, by Rama.
What's in the Brahma Sutra?
Apashudra Adhikarna.
This is the story of the in Benares with the dog.
No. In Brahma Sutra, this is one particular Adhikarna, where Shudras and women are forbidden right to learn Shudra, the Vedas.
Mm-hmm.
That is called Apashudra Adhikarna.
Okay, but Shankara also says in other places that they're not prevented from accessing the knowledge of the Vedantas.
Hmm.
They can't actually learn in the orthodox manner. It doesn't mean that they can't get access to the knowledge.
Shankara elsewhere says the only way to that knowledge is through Tattvamasi Mahabharata.
He says
the only way is Tattvamasi, no?
Not Tattvamasi. Shankara always stressed the Jnana Marga.
That's right.
Yeah. And
this Jnana Marga, in my opinion, is not limited to Upanishad as, again, texts. We do have evidence. We do. Maitreyi, Gargi, they were women.
They
didn't know about the Upanishad as fixed text.
They
got, the teaching that they got was an oral teaching from their husbands. And because they were not learned, they could not actually hear Shruti the way it was formulated at the time. So they heard some teaching. It was a very informal teaching. So it shows that for anybody, and here the competence that was required as far as Maitreyi, because he offers her the wealth, she refuses it. The only thing I'm interested in is immortality. Teach me immortality.
Yeah.
He says, yes, that's the competence that's needed.
Yeah.
It's not about whether she can learn the Vedas or not because of her status as a woman. It's because she has this mumukshutva. That's the only competence that's required there. It's right there in Upanishads.
Yeah, of course, you see, these are the points presented by Chattambi Swamigal in his Vedadhikara Nirupanam. The points Chattambi Swamigal puts forward in his Vedadhikara Nirupanam is the same. So, there is no... as Shankara says, there cannot be any restriction for
knowledge.
Yeah, knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah, then it's okay.
But see, to equate knowledge with a piece of literary work, that's where the mistake occurs, I think. And that's where there's been lots of mistakes.
No.
But it just doesn't mean.
No, yeah.
Literature
was a man of his time. I mean, there's no point trying to.
No, the thing.
Liberal.
In one sense, he was very liberal, yes.
Yeah, no,
absolutely.
No. Watson, the point is not that. How things were practiced in our society, that is, as far as we are concerned, as far as I am concerned, that is most important. You can interpret in any way you like. I can also. But how things were there in my society, that is the problem. In my society, even today, these discriminations exist based on your birth, based on your caste. Then these arguments or logics will not apply. We have to establish our case based on our experience. So we say, we means not only me, myself, Sridharan Guru, Chattambi Swamigal, we say, you see, maybe Shankara was magnanimous. Shankara never intended so. But these works, to the credit of Shankaracharya, they say that these restrictions are there or were there. For example, the Viveka Chudamani is here.
Yeah. Well, again, Viveka Chudamani, no one can actually show that it's Shankara's work. Many scholars have shown that it's not, if anything.
Yeah.
So, again, we have to.
In the works that are accepted to be by Shankara, there's no indication he was anti-caste.
No, he never said that he was anti-caste, and he would never actually uphold any view like that. But he holds this twofold view, which is called Pravritti Dharma and Nivritti Dharma. From the Pravritti Dharma standpoint, he accepts, of course, all these differentiations.
Mm.
And you would go with that. This is the orthodox way. Before Nivritti Dharma, there's no restrictions of caste at all. Knowledge is to be given to anybody regardless of affiliation.
No, but Shankara could have plainly said it somewhere. Can you point out anywhere any statement of Shankara to that effect? My contention is not a single word can be pointed out from the entire literature of Shankara where he directly, plainly says that which you say. Because in the end of Vedadhikara Nirupanam, what Chattambi Swamigal says is the same thing.
Well, I mean, it's like when you use the word brahmanas as those who receive the teaching. Again, those who want to interpret this as the Brahman class, you're free to do so. But, of course, the characteristics of those brahmanas necessarily cannot apply to just Brahmins. It's just an impossibility. That's throughout the literature.
But
Brahmin always referred here to people having certain qualifications to receive knowledge. He mentions what those qualifications are, and they are fourfold. Nothing about the status as a Brahmana, right?
Yeah, but if you're not born as a Brahmin, then you wouldn't even be a contender. I mean, he's talking about people who are.
You wouldn't be a contender in an orthodox manner. That's why he was able to facilitate the orthodox milieu in which, and as you say, he's a man of his time, so that's why he wasn't so forceful into negating all these these tenets from the orthodoxy.
Mm.
But at the same time, he was able to also make it and actually make it as universal as one can make it. And I think that's very clear. And the Upanishads themselves, I think, are very clear about that, without getting into commentaries.
Well, there are other religions contemporaneous with them.
Then the point is, these were, for example, Sri Narayana Guru, Chattambi Swamiji. See, these were people who spend their whole life for learning these things. When Chattambi Swamigal, as I told you, I have collected 1,000 pages. See, why should such a person devote his time and energy for opposing Shankara? No, to my understanding, it's of no use. So, of course, since Shankara supported, or at least since Shankara has nothing, Shankara did not state anything plainly in favor of what you say, these people had no other way but to retort to him. And nobody was willing simply to, you see,
I beg to disagree with that.
Yeah.
The qualifications for knowledge, Atman, Atma, Viveka.
Yeah.
Right? No restrictions cast on that.
No, yeah.
Vairagya.
Yeah.
No restrictions cast on that. Mumukshutva, is there a restriction on this?
In all of the Digvijaya literature, the first thing Shankara asks people he meets is whether they're a Brahmin or not. And if they're...
Digvijaya.